Around Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
No Wemby, no problem. We are hoping that's the case, but with the Kings, you never know. Continuing the Herder conversation as well, this is from the 530. The upside for Duarte and Ellis and Davion just isn't there. That's why Herder gets the benefit of the doubt. I've asked this before. Who is Kevin Herder on another team, right? What is the best version of Kevin Herder in the NBA, or who is the best version of Kevin Herder in the NBA right now?
I think it's just him hitting more. It's pick your favorite shooter on a team.
It's a different league, man.
I mean, Grayson Allen, you know, you asked the question the other day, Grayson Allen or Kevin Herter.
Like, he ain't scrappy like Grayson.
I mean, Grayson, you asked best case you. Scenario.
Like, Grayson will A-Town stomp you.
If Kevin hits, you know, has multiple games of hitting 6+ threes or something, like that's where Kevin Herter, you know, we're not here talking about Davion Mitchell because he hit 4 threes last night. It's as simple as if Kevin Herter's hitting his shots, we're just kind of glossing over all the defensive stuff. And so if he's hitting...
But there was no time last night for him to even... He took two.
He was 0-2.
But that's how much of a liability he was.
Absolutely. No, for sure.
So he couldn't even have a chance to even it out.
Yeah, I mean, you know...
You got two shots. But that's how... Now, he's not going to be exposed like that every single game.
Sure. If Davion's not hitting his shots... Right. Kevin probably gets to go back out there.
That's true. And it's funny because just last week he was hoping that he would get to close that
That's
game.
That's right.
You got bigger fish to fry, my friend.
Yeah, buddy. You've got to worry about staying on the floor. And, you know, I guess that's kind of what Kevin was saying. But, you know, I guess reading into it seemed like he was more saying Mike's got to put me out there. But, you know, you have to earn it. You are not De'Aaron Fox. You are not Domantas Sabonis. You do not get the benefit of the doubt, or you shouldn't get the benefit of the doubt on this team. And frankly, Kevin's had plenty of opportunities to make this thing work. And this is not like he's played great for you all season and is going through a cold stretch.
Right.
He's been down all season long. And we're just asking for a certain level of consistency. And if you're not providing consistency, then we're going to have to look somewhere else to someone who can give it to us on that night. And I think that's where the Kings are at, where they're essentially playing hot hand basketball right now. If you have it going on a given night, you're probably going to get the 18 to 20 minutes. And it could be Kevin, but it could also be Davion. It could also be Keon. And we saw last night, Trey Lyles got 30 minutes. So it's also not just... Kevin Herter. You know, we are focusing a lot on Kevin Herter. There's another starter who did not play over 20 minutes last night, and it's a guy that you and I have talked about quite a bit, HB. He actually had a good offensive game. 5 of 7, 11 points in 15 minutes, but again, I think that they just felt like Trey Lyles provided them with a little bit more spacing, a little bit more rebounding, a little bit more size in general, and I think that they're just left a little cold every time HB's out, or a lot of the time HB's out there.
Yeah, and I guess the HB Trey Lyles thing is more of, hey, we can combine these two guys and get what we need. If HB is going, we can go heavier on HB. If Trey Lyles gets going, he was 0-for-2 from 3 again. Chris, I'm going to keep an eye on it because you need him to hit threes. He had 7 points, but you need that guy to hit threes if that spacing the floor is going to be a thing. And we have the conversation about the small ball lineup with Trey at the 5. So between those at this point, and I don't know if it's a recipe for success. We still don't think that this team has enough to win a championship, or would be pretty surprised if they do. But at this point, I don't even know if we should look at these players as individuals anymore. It's just, what can I get out of this position?
Yes. Right. Exactly.
Right. So out of the HB position, they got 18 points. They got, you know what I mean? That's how you're looking. You got 45 minutes out of the HB position with 18 points and a combined, 6 rebounds. Well, by the way, guess who all 6 were from? Not Harrison Barnes. And, you know, 1 block. That's how I think Coach Mike Brown is looking at those things. So let's do the same thing with the Herter position. With the Herter position, you had 2, and then you had 5, 7. So you had you had 19 points.
Yep.
Right. You had 19 points from the Herter, that secondary guard position. 19 points.
That's not including Malik Monk.
That's not. I'm not including Malik Monk. Yeah. So you had basically 19 points from that position. That's not the best way to look at it, but unfortunately, that's how I think Coach is looking at it. I don't think he's looking at it as players. I think he's saying, I need to get production from that position, from whoever's going that night.
Yeah.
Whoever's going that night.
No, and I mean, yeah, last night I think the guards really won it. I mean, you look at the guards who weren't Kevin Huerter, and again, that's where you get a majority of your points from. De'Aaron and Malik combined for 70, and then you add Davion and Keon off the bench, throwing in an additional, 17 points. Like, that's a ton of production from your guys' guards. And funny enough, reread that tweet yesterday from Jason Timpf, who pretty much, shout out him. Jason Timpf is great with the Volume Network. He pretty much called it. He said yesterday that the Kings, the guard speed is going to be an issue for the Lakers, and they took it to him. I mean, I'm looking at it here. Austin Reeves on defense last night. I talk a lot about D'Lo and his defense being terrible. Austin Reeves, the Kings scored 36 points on Austin Reeves. They were 15 of 23, 65%, 5 of 6 from 3 on Austin Reeves. They abused those guys. And that's the thing that I've been asking from De'Aaron for so long, I feel like, is just if you have a matchup that you feel like you can exploit over and over and over and over again, just do it. Just like again, you are the head of the snake. This team goes as far as you go. If you just have a 44-point night, there's not going to be a lot of instances in which the Kings are going to lose and De'Aaron scores 40-plus. So I love to see it, and I hope that just in general the guards take it on themselves, whether it be De'Aaron and Malik or Keon and Davion too. Say, we have – a lot of the times the game is decided by those guys play. And I just hope that they can continue to be that productive. It doesn't have to be Davion 4-4 every night. But we saw Keon, his first quarter, Keon Ellis, this is crazy to me. And I know plus minus is a bit of a sticky stat, but this is, you can't ignore this. Keon Ellis' first quarter from last night, he played a minute and 40 seconds. The Kings were a plus 10. In those minute and 40 seconds. And he completely turned that game around.
He did.
And I think that that's the kind of thing where it doesn't really show up on the box score. He had, if you look at just his non-plus minus stats in that first quarter, Keon Ellis, 0 points, 0 assists, 1 rebound, no shots, no threes, no free throws, no nothing. But the fact that he had a plus 10, that's the kind of impact that they need. And, you just don't get that from – you're not going to get a zero-point stat line from Kevin Huerter and say, Kevin Huerter actually did really impact the game in that situation. And that's just kind of where I think those other guys are at and where Kevin needs to figure out how to have impact.
Let's hear from John, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What's up, John? You're on Styles and Watkins. What you got for us?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Just a couple of quick comments. I'm 67, been a long time Kings fan. Mm-hmm. My concern is we have not had a small forward. I've looked for every year for years and years when we're going to get a real small forward, not a tweener like Harrison Barnes that's either or. And earlier you're talking about this home court advantage, and we just don't have the guy that has the fight at home to just start yelling at the guys. So my advice is we got to find a small forward, a true small forward, which I've been waiting for years and years now, and somebody who's going to be aggressive, kind of a team leader, outspoken, play some defense.
Thanks for
the good day, guys.
Thanks, John. Thanks for the call.
I've been screaming for years for that.
But is that not Trey Lyles?
No, it's not. No, not at all. They need like a legit, like a star. Having an elite three is the quickest way to be a championship contender in this league. You look at LeBron, you look at what the Celtics do, you look at just the KD. If you have a guy who can be 6'6 to 6'9, be able to have the ball in his hands, shoot, play defense, play physical, have essentially guard skill set in a forward's body, that's what this team desperately has lacked forever. I mean, Rudy Gay, you can say he was, frankly, really, since Ron Artest, he's the best small forward this team has had. And I think Keegan is probably going to take that mantle. This team has desperately needed help at the three for as long as I can remember, and they have never addressed it. And I think, we were asking earlier, what's the position where you can get another playmaker? the three position is where, I mean, you know, Luka brings the ball down the floor. LeBron brings the ball down the floor. Even guys like Giannis are now bringing the ball. Sabonis brings the ball down the floor. I think if you can have a small forward, Paul George is my ideal guy for this. I always think if you could have thrown Paul George on this, you know, maybe Paul George from 2 or 3 years ago on this Kings team, that's the exact kind of guy you're looking for. That's why I want Jimmy Butler. This team desperately needs a high level three in order to get to championship contention in my eyes.
I am now confused because I don't know how you get that if you are preparing Keegan Murray to be the three of the future. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit confused with that.
He could be the four. You can move Keegan to the four. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, this could be a conversation definitely for another day. That's where, you know, you might have to make some tough decisions. You might have to.
I mean, that's what, you know, yeah. Yeah. Today is not the day for that, but that's where there's no way to have this conversation without having that conversation.
Or, I mean, Miami Heat just got a three. They got Jaime Jaquez from the draft. You know, mm-hmm. It's not crazy. Just because the Kings aren't going to be in the lottery does not mean that they cannot find an impact player at some point in the draft. Kawhi was drafted in the late lottery. You can find guys. It's just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously your chances go down severely, but there's ways of getting those kind of guys in here. But of course, the easiest way and the most likely is via trade.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when we know the whole free agency deal out here in Sacramento. But, you know, we have plenty of time to discuss those things. The bottom line is you do not have that person this season, but you got to get out there anyway and see what happens. I think you might have a version of that, and moving forward, you might have it by committee, you know, to what John said about the outspoken part. That's just something. I mean, Paul George isn't outspoken. Jimmy Butler is.
He sure
but
is.
You're probably not going to find.
Yeah.
Basically, John, that is Jimmy Butler, and there are not a ton of Jimmy Butlers running around. You might get some parts of it. You might get the Paul George-ness, and like I said, he's not very outspoken. So you might get something.
Great podcast, though.
Great podcast, Podcast B. You're probably not going to find that whole package because that's a superstar, you know? And that is why people thought about, you know, look at the guys that were available. That's also not Pascal.
Nope.
That's also not
Kyle
OG Anunoby.
It's not Jerry Grant.
It's Kyle Kuzma in some ways?
Maybe. I mean, you're hoping that he can turn into that.
Jeremy Grant. So there's just not a lot of those dudes running around. But are the Kings missing someone like that? They sure are.
By the way, real quick here, I just want to say this because it's on our TV screen right now. NBA Today is on, and they're probably wrapping up their first block right now, and they're choosing to focus from last night's game. Can the Lakers count on Anthony Davis down the stretch? Nothing about the Kings, nothing about them having
they
a great
They showed the Kings on the highlights because
Did
they had,
really?
Well,
oh,
they
wow.
had to.
How noble
because that's
of
who
them.
They that's who they play.
How noble. De'Aaron had a career high, and Sabonis had a 20-point or 20-rebound triple-double. But, yeah, let's ask the question of whether or not the Lakers can count on AD down the stretch. Sure.
That's
Sorry.
You know, that's why that's why
four-letter network's awesome.
That's why national media is what it is. You know who they have to talk about every single day.
And look at that. Look where they're going next. To the Bay Area beatdown.
Like it was two guys. That was last night. Yeah. Well, they did talk about when they did get beat down as well. And De'Aaron tied his career high, but that's why, hey, local media matters.
That's right.
That's right. Keep on
tuning in.
When we return, we continue the conversation. How can the Kings avoid the letdown? Help us figure it out. Sals and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
This one's for Chris Watkins.
What'd I do?
As Chris likes to complain about Steph Curry ruining the game.
Could have just stopped at complain.
That's also true. Draymond Green now has more career three-pointers than Larry Bird. Yeah, 650. That's Larry Bird has 649.
Oh, well, there you go.
What are we going to do with these stats? I mean, think about it in 10 years from now.
It's going to be insane when Sabonis has more threes than Larry Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to hear how our kids talk about basketball and some of the, Draymond Green, oh my gosh, like, what are you talking about?
It could be, how good could Larry Bird actually be when Draymond has more threes than
him? Oh yeah, totally. And then when they look at Michael Jordan and the fact he shot 32% from three in his career, it's like, not my GOAT, could never be.
Right.
So, that's ridiculous, first off, first and foremost, the fact that Draymond's hit more threes than Larry Bird has.
Did the three-point line exist all Larry's career, his entire career?
I believe when was it implemented? Entire NBA career. I think they might have introduced it when he was in college, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but yeah, I mean, the three-point line, if I'm not mistaken, did come in.
It was 1979.
Okay, I was going to say late 70s.
And the 1979-1980 season. And then if you look at Larry Bird's.
He came in the 79-80 season.
There you go.
So, right it was on. Still so new.
Yeah. Everyone was scared of it.
Everybody was, what do we do with this?
If you guys had to guess, what's the most threes per game Larry Bird took in his career? For reference here, let me look at what Draymond is taking this season and what Draymond's career high is he took 4.2 threes his third year in the league.
That's crazy.
And this season, Draymond's taking 2.4. So how many threes per game do we think is the most Larry Bird ever took in a season?
I'm going to for the season?
For the season.
Per game.
3.5?
Yeah, that sounds right.
I'll say 3.6.
4 sounds high. It sounds so high. So, yeah, I'm right there with Nate. I might say, but Chris is asking, so I'm actually going to say 2.8.
He averaged 3.1 points per game when he was 31 years old. This is his 10th year in the NBA.
It took him
10 seasons to get to 3.1 threes in a season.
They had to get used to it. They had to get, comfortable with
sure
the three.
Did.
And Draymond's just jacking him up.
He is.
4.5 in his third season? Is that what you said?
4.5 in his third, or 4.2 in his third season.
This is another summer conversation, but you think they ever move it back?
The three-point line
like in
back?
30 years.
It might happen. Huh. It definitely might, even if it's just like just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, just because of the rate that I honestly think what they're going to do is push it back, and this has been taught. I'm not the first person to come up with this, but they're going to get rid of the corner three.
I saw a rendering of that to where the arch just kind of blends into out of bounds.
Yep.
Yeah. So anything in the corner would no longer be a three.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah, because the corner three is the shortest three by distance, and efficiency-wise, I mean, I think, it's like 40% average on corner threes as opposed to like a 38% average on top of the key. So
what would P.J. Tucker do?
Well,
Allen.
That's the thing is, there's a lot of guys who eat off that.
Yeah.
And if you take it out of the game – you're going to get a lot deeper threes, but at the same time, it adds space. Does it add spacing? I guess it just kind of shifts how the game is spaced. But, it's an interesting proposal.
I got one more for you guys.
Yes, sir.
What's been the biggest change to the NBA since adding the three-point line? Like, what can I – the only thing I'm really thinking of, it's not on the same level at all, but the shot clock change to the 14, that was kind of drastic. But, what – rule change,
hand checking is one. I would say defensive three in the key, because it just kind of, it prevents you from clogging the lane, and you can't just always have somebody at the rim, and so it just kind of leads to more free flowing action. That more in terms of play style, but I would probably say the three in the key.
Three in the key. The hand checking, I think, was big too.
Yeah.
And now
the old heads will tell you.
Right. And it's gone too far in the other direction. The flagrant thing, which is more recent, I don't think it's really changed the game too much. I mean, oh, that's a flagrant instead of just a common foul. But, you know, unless I guess games that are decided by less than 2 points or whatever.
The challenge.
Could be a big deal. The challenge.
Is annoying. I'm so over it.
Yeah.
I'm so over challenges.
It's too fresh.
It's also just like, it feels like, it's just, I have a, yesterday I thought Mike Brown failed both of his challenges and he ended up passing them both. And Mike Brown's been terrible on challenges all year. I just feel like coaches have no, at least Mike Brown has no logic or just.
I love it.
Sense of reason for why they choose the challenge and when they choose the challenge. So I have no problem getting rid of the challenges. It's driving me insane.
Get rid of them.
It's just, it's, I don't think it's helping. Like, I don't think that there's a lot of calls that. It ends up stalling the game a lot, and then, a lot of the time it feels like they end up still getting it wrong or still having it be controversial. I don't know. I just think it's not implemented well. It just kind of makes the game feel a little clunky.
Yeah, and you gotta go in, and the refs still get booed, and, hey, we kind of handed it over. And then, for example, the Trey Lyles thing where a couple games ago – when he was sliding and they called the foul, the problem was in that slow motion.
Exactly.
His hip was moving.
Right.
Is that the integrity or is that the purpose of the rule? No. But now that they've seen that, I'll never forget. This was when we got March Madness around the corner. I'll never forget. This was when it was Texas Tech, and I can't recall who it was against. And they went to replay, they went to review, and it was one of those to where it was out on somebody, but the way it went out, it touched the other guy's finger. But how it the ball got knocked out of his hand.
Yeah.
As he got knocked out of his hand in slow motion, you saw
maybe
the ball
like his finger
technically was still on his hand, and they kept the ball.
Yeah.
Or, they lost the ball.
Right.
Even though... Does that ever get reviewed throughout
the
course of the season?
The spirit of it, too.
Yeah,
it's
the spirit
like
of
he
the
hit
rule.
It out of his hand.
Yes.
It just so happened to literally touch the guy's fingertip.
And nobody really talked about it. Yeah. It was so bizarre to me. And the spirit of the rule, which reminds me, Chris and I are about to get into it. Ooh. Because he might be down on challenges, but our takes on charges.
Oh, man.
No, it's time.
It's time.
It is time. You're not going to want to miss this because. Chris and I.
It's going to get hot in here.
It's going to get hot in here. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Minutes until your chance to win Chris Brown tickets. Live Nation has teamed up with Sacktown Sports for your chance to see Chris Brown at the Golden One Center this summer. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline at 1 p.m. and we will pick the number you need to be. Nate Littlefield will in 30 minutes. That is your opportunity to win those tickets. All right. So this has actually bugged me for a while, and I don't know if you should go first or if I should go first. I guess since I'm the aggressor here, I will go first and we will see where you net out. And if you want to be a part of the conversation, 916-339-1140, and take a side here. No fence sitting. Take a side if you're on my side or Chris's side. And we'll hear from Nate as well, see what he thinks. Okay, Chris.
Okay.
Here's my problem.
Yes.
You talk about the reason that you reminded me was when you said spirit of the rule.
Sure.
Spirit of the rule, Chris.
Yes.
Okay. So when it comes to charges, the whole thing... Well, initially, I would assume it was, hey, if somebody is coming down and you hold your ground, right, you take the charge.
Yeah.
what it has turned into, and all the defenders do it, everybody does it. I'm going to sprint to this spot while this – it's a timing thing. I'm going to sprint to this spot right before this guy takes off. And I think my issue with it is a lot of times there's not enough room for the – some of them are legit, but sometimes there's not enough room for these guys to deviate and change their bodies, and they end up being charges. And it's – you're not even attempting to defend. And then – oh! And then they fall over.
Yes.
Right? They get – oh, my goodness. And they get the call.
Yeah.
That's not defense.
No, you're not wrong. And, like, what you're saying is definitely, like, hoopers are on your side.
Yes.
For sure. Because you're not wrong. Like, because the spirit of – playing basketball is like
you're defending it. Oh my goodness!
Exactly.
You take the charge.
Exactly, but also like if you're playing, like the reason why no one likes when the guy takes charges on pickup is because, dude, we're all out here to play basketball. Just like try and block the shot.
Yes.
It's like we're not out here playing NBA. Like I mean, not that really, but we're just not out here, you know, trying to make the league here. Mm-hmm. Just go for the attempt, and if you get the block, cool, awesome, you can flex. No one's going to be like, yes, man, thank you for taking charges on the blacktop right now.
And if you take a charge and pick up, I won't play with you.
And that's fair. I'm not taking any charges and pick up. That's for dang sure. But, I completely agree with you. But, like, it's a way for Domantas Sabonis and guys like Trayce Jackson-Davis, and honestly, DeMarcus Cousins mastered it. Kevin Love, too. He's really the one who...
Draymond does it a lot.
Draymond does it a ton. It's just like another way of defending, and I think I understand why, because it causes the block charge. Block versus charge has become the NFL or the NBA version of the NFL's catch or no catch, where you post a video and 70% of or 50% of people will say it's a block. 50% of people will say it's a charge. It's a little non-ethical, which also fits your mold, your type of basketball player. Mm-hmm. But I just think that it's just a way of defending. Like it's not the most flashy thing, but if you get to a spot first, like it's the spirit to go to the spirit of what a charge is supposed to do. It's supposed to say, hey, this offensive player is out of control, mm-hmm. and since you had the smarts or the wherewithal to be in this spot first, he cannot just run you over. It's like over the back. You cannot just say, I am going to get this basketball because I am more athletic or I can get to the rim. So I just think that it's a way of evening out the game. It's so that guards can still guard centers and things like that. Like it's not – I understand why you wouldn't love it, but at the same time – you know, come on, Allen, as a Zont, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to call you the V word.
Come on.
As a Zont yourself, you should appreciate, like,
no, I don't.
It's your way of defending the paint. How else is Allen Stiles supposed to defend the paint?
I'm not going to.
That's why you're not playing Kevin Herter.
Take a charge.
Come on.
Ryan Williams' art rule should be that the defender only takes a charge if their arms are also raised to show an attempt at defense. Patrick Donaldson then says,
that's interesting.
Good point, Ryan, but they normally have their hands down to protect their family jewels,
yes.
Which is also true, but I do think that is also what bothers me.
It doesn't
look like a basketball position.
Sure.
You look like a cone. You look like a cone.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
knock me over. Oh, please don't knock me over. Then you get knocked over. Yeah, take that charge.
I would
and
say yes.
Does it all the time, too.
He does. No, he does.
He's got the most charges, I think, drawn easily the rookies, maybe out of the whole league.
I will say, ideally, yes, you should put your hands up. But the problem is, and we've seen this with Domantas Sabonis, and he stopped doing it. If you put your hands up, the refs, and this is more so the refs' fault, the refs being bad, they think, because you're supposed to go straight up, if you get hit in the stomach, you're going to fold. And then your arms lean forward, and it looks like a foul. So having your hands, you know, protecting your jewels.
Yeah.
It's a way to stay firm.
But you can't jump and
do
that.
You just gotta fall.
You can't jump and protect the jewels.
Well, if you jump, then it's no longer a charge attempt. It's a verticality.
Right.
So,
which is interesting because last night, the offensive foul that got overturned for Malik, what was that
like
call?
Like I said,
you can't just knee in the stomach?
I thought it was a foul. I thought it was a foul on Malik because he was in the circle.
And he jumped.
I guess it's...
Could you revert to no call there?
They could have, but I think they said that Jackson Hayes, you're not allowed to take off and have your knee as a weapon, essentially. The same way that the Warriors accused Sabonis of using the ball as a weapon.
Oh, or the shoulder. Yeah. Shoulder. Shoulder.
You cannot just put your knee in the air and take off like Superman
shoulder,
and say,
shoulder,
get out of the way, clear out, or else you're going to get a knee to the chest. So I think the call was just, you can't have your knee out on an attack.
You know, it's just not basketball.
I hear you. We actually disagree less than what I thought we did.
Let me sprint over here and just get in position.
It's not great. Again, it's not ethical, and it's not what I think hoopers want to see, but it's what coaches want
to
see.
Let me put it to you like this.
Yeah.
Let me put it to you like this. Man, mano y mano, man v man, right? One on one. If a charge comes organically and you even sell it a little bit, I'm cool. It's the help charges. That's what I have a problem with.
That's just fundamental rotation.
No, it's not. It is if you try to defend. Let me just run over here and just stop.
I think the running over is a part of the game being so fast, though. Because, like, if the same thing happens at a high school level or at an elementary level, you're just saying, that kid rotated perfectly in time, got to the spot before that guy. But I think since in the NBA, these guys can get to the rim in a half a second, you have to sprint, and so it just looks worse. Because it is just fun. Like, getting a charge is the most fundamental coach-loving basketball you could play.
And don't get me wrong. When your team gets the call, you love it. You only complain when your team doesn't get it, typically.
It feels like an interception in football. It really does. Yeah. Like, in terms of, like, the energy it creates, it's not just, like, a turnover. It's a, oh, my gosh, like, we actively made you guys mess up.
Okay. Kyle Lowry was a guy, still is a guy, and it bothers me.
He's got the cushion back there.
He does, but that's the front, not the back. When they say, oh my goodness, he's one of the best in the league, and we're using that as a part of the skill set.
Yeah, Kevin Love, best in the league at drawing charges, 100%.
Come on,
he's been the best in the league in drawing charges because a guy like Kevin Love is never going to average 2 blocks a game. But he can average 2 charges a game, and it's the same result. As a matter of fact, it's a better result because blocks, you don't 100% get the rebound on it. You're getting the ball every single time.
You have no shame.
No,
they have
none
no,
at all.
They have no shame. Oh!
None at all. Just winning. That's it. Just winning basketball. Sorry.
I don't want to hear that. It just bothers me.
Yeah. Well, go watch the Globetrotters. I don't know. You won't get any charges in the Globetrotters game.
Well, you never know these days if they're trying to...
That's right. You can make it pretty flashy.
You're trying to make it pretty flashy for sure.
360 charge.
When we return, we take a breather from the Kings. And this one should get people talking. Brandon Ayuk was asked to choose between Trey Lance, a future Viking, Trey Lance, and Jimmy Garoppolo.
Let's relax.
We will play that audio to let you know who he chose. And are we headed towards another super cast of Hall of Fame coaches and Hall of Fame players in the broadcast world? Stiles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Minutes, 1 o'clock, your chance to win Chris Brown tickets. All you have to do is call in 15 minutes, 916-339-1140, and if you are the lucky number, you will win a pair of tickets to see Chris Brown at the Golden 1 Center on July 30th. For more information, visit SacktownSports.com as we transition just for a little bit here to Brandon Ayuk, and I know Nate is going to have some strong feelings on this one. Brandon Ayuk was asked via IG Live, which you got to be careful with.
Yeah, definitely.
But IG Live, who he would choose for his quarterback, Jimmy
Garoppolo or Trey Lance is what he said.
B.A. Trey Lance or Jimmy G.
Bro, it's an easy question. It's really an easy right, question,
answer.
Bro. I just
answer the question,
it.
Bro.
I go Trey Lance.
There you go.
He said it's an easy. And right. that was not Ayuk laughing either.
No, it wasn't Ayuk laughing. I think they were just laughing because
they asked him the question.
It's a tough question.
It's a crazy question to ask.
Yeah, and he's got to answer it, and he did. And that could mean a lot of things. That could mean he had a better just relationship with Trey. Does that mean Trey is a better quarterback
than
Jimmy?
Could be catch too. It could just be, yeah, when we play catch, I like the way Trey throws the ball better. Catch is not the same as in game.
Yeah.
I got the inside on this one.
Okay. Do you?
When Trey played with Ayuk, Ayuk undoubtedly had better numbers and like played better. You could tell Ayuk was his number one target over Debo. And this was
with
Versus Jimmy. Yeah. Not with Jimmy. Because Debo was number one. It was Debo Kittle with Jimmy because of safety valves.
Yes.
Trey would hook it up to Ayuk. It was a different game. It was a different game he played with Ayuk. That's just, you know. So I would have said, I honestly, if you would have asked me what he said, that probably would have been my guess. But hindsight's 20/20.
Well, I guess that definitely tracks. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, just in terms of like you even just think about the style of play that both of those quarterbacks are. You nailed it, Nate. You said Kittle and Debo, both of those guys are a lot more safety blankets, a lot more underneath stuff. And from the little that we know about how Trey Lance likes to play, man likes to air it out. And that's definitely a lot more of Debo's range, or I'm sorry, of Ayuk's range is the deep stuff and, you know, getting things 20 plus yards down the field. And that's pretty much where Trey lived. So that definitely makes sense.
Yeah. Not really too much to do with it. Is it a smaller sample size? I'm trying to remember because Trey didn't play very much. And
yeah.
Jimmy was
a smaller sample size than
Trey versus Jimmy. He obviously played with Jimmy more.
Yeah.
So
because like his rookie year was with Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy was they were bad that year. So I think Jimmy was banged up.
Mm.
2020 was his rookie year. Yeah, Jimmy was banged up.
And he was in the doghouse at that time.
Quote unquote. But Shanahan also says, no, he wasn't. So I don't know what that even means. But yeah, I think it's because of the blocking. And then he comes to form. But I mean, if you give him the option between those two and Brock.
Right. I mean, that's why that wasn't part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, if he had true serum, he's taking Brock because Brock will sling it to him for sure.
Well, he's not. That wasn't the question.
I know.
That wasn't the question. Now, of course, everybody said, well, that's what they want to hear. But he's going. I mean, is it worth it? I mean, his numbers obviously were legit, right? So I think he would take Brock because he'd have to take Brock. But there's probably a part of him, based on what you said, Nate, that the reason Trey got drafted originally was because he could chuck that thing, right? He could be a Sacramento King.
And he can
run
move.
And chuck.
Yeah.
And he can move.
That
run
was
and
a
chuck.
Big thing, especially, I mean, you see Shanahan run him into the ground real quick.
Yeah.
That was the thing. They wanted him to run. That was the ability, and he got flack for it, and he'd push back with, well, Lamar does it every day.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying there might be a part of Ayuk that might think, man, I got some things that I would like to do that I don't get to do. I'm not saying it's because Brock can't make those throws. I mean, you saw the fluke to Ayuk or whatever you want to call it, but it would have been a different game plan if Trey was still here. So I don't think Ayuk is really thinking about that. He just got asked a question and he answered the question.
You think the game plan would have been different between Brock and Trey?
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'd say not. Definitely, I know this wasn't the question, but not as big between of a gap as it would be between Jimmy and Trey. Like I think it's pretty similar. I think he would have had Trey running more designed runs, but that's because Trey at that point was a worse thrower, and it would have taken him a while. But I think Brock, I think it's a more similar game plan to what Shanahan wanted with Trey Lance.
I think it's, yeah, I think,
I think it's pretty close. Sorry, I should be more clear. I think it's pretty close.
Sure, maybe a couple more go routes mixed in. Maybe.
For Trey?
With Trey, yes.
Maybe. Yes.
Because that's the whole thing. He's got a huge arm.
Right.
Yeah, he just wasn't super accurate. Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about.
I know.
We're talking about in theory.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. And that's all we know of Trey.
Yeah, I wonder. I wonder if, because I mean, clearly, I think the big thing too is Kyle trusts Trey, or would have trusted Trey, significantly less than he trusts Brock, or even trusts Jimmy even. And so I do wonder, I mean, how much and how confident Kyle would have felt to have him making throws over the middle, making those you know, shorter timing throws. Mm-hmm. And to your point, Alan, like, would he have just kind of said, you know, with Trey, we're not going to be able to, you know, calculate, you know, slowly move the ball down the field. Right. Maybe we do throw in a little bit more big play. You know, we're a little bit more big play hunting because of the inaccuracy that Trey gives. And so it would have been an interesting experiment. But as we know, I guess we'll never know.
Well, we'll see him with Addison Jefferson. Look, and we will see all of those things.
Scout team quarterback, maybe.
Because he still got Kirk. You're bringing Kirk
Kirk's
back.
Coming back. And then we're going to draft a quarterback, too. So Trey can hold the clipboard.
There you go. You know? Well, we'll see. He's not done yet, but
he's
not going to play.
He's got a clear line to starting in Dallas because we know Jerry is trying to get Dak up out of there. So
keeping it with the Niners, you have three players with ties to the Niners in this year's draft. You have Brendan Rice, wide receiver, Jerry Rice's son. You have Luke McCaffrey, Christian McCaffrey's brother, and you have Frank Gore Jr., who is Frank Gore's son.
It's not a Ricky Council situation here.
Really, two of them went to smaller schools, yeah. Right? Where Frank Gore Jr., I believe, went to Southern Mississippi.
Miss, I think. Yeah,
Southern Mississippi. Luke McCaffrey went to Rice,
yeah.
Who is not really a football powerhouse. And you have Brendan Rice, who went to USC. And the projection for Brendan Rice, and this is from Big Blue View, says second or third receiver at the NFL level, which is essentially what I think the Niners could feel like they need unless they move on from Ayuk, and we're assuming Debo is assumed to be their number one. They pay him like their number one. But if you could draft any of these guys, yeah. I mean, who are you interested in? Luke McCaffrey. None of them seem to be top picks, which I think makes going to the Niners more realistic. I think the least realistic would be, even though Frank Gore was all up in
the draft rooms,
room and the combine this weekend, but I don't see why you would need to draft another running back.
Yeah, I mean, and I think draft value is going to play the biggest role in that. Like if Frank Gore Jr. is a sixth or seventh round projected grade, like, I don't know how much the Niners really care if he's going to be impactful or not, because it is just kind of a good faith gesture. And, you know, if it works out, it works out. If not, it's not the biggest deal. Yeah, I guess none of them really make a ton of sense. But I think bringing in Jerry Rice, I'm more honestly thinking from a PR standpoint, which is the coolest. And I think I'm stuck between McCaffrey and Jerry Rice, because McCaffrey would be awesome. His brother beat both of his 40 times, as in the brother who's currently in the combine in the draft process, beat his 40 time. I think he beat his vertical jump too. So he's got all the athletic tools of McCaffrey, and obviously I think McCaffrey's the father of McCaffrey. Also had some time on the Niners, so you kind of have full circle, entire family moment there. But it's tough to not want a legend. And, you know, Frank Gore is definitely a legend, but Jerry freaking Rice, to have Jerry Rice's son would probably be the coolest.
Yeah, I think so. And, of course, you see these guys. I'm just reading it now. Brendan Rice is the best-kept secret in the draft. They're saying that
But if his name is Tommy Thompson, Is he still the most exciting prospect?
Mid day three pick, right? Okay. So again, really that same line I'm seeing here for Luke McCaffrey. This is from USA Today. They're thinking that he'll go in the fifth round, and Frank Gore Jr.'s son is projected, is from Sportskeeda, the sixth round. So I think by default you would just go with Brendan Rice if he's available.
I guess, yeah. Nate, do you have any thoughts on just in terms of like for fun, not maybe necessarily factoring in the actual players themselves,
yeah.
but from just from the Niners perspective, Niner fan perspective, what one do you feel like is the most fun or like the one that's most likely to sell the most jerseys?
I'll be honest, yeah, I'm not looking at combine. Yeah, combine stuff. Yeah. I'm not paying attention to all that right now. I think I'm going to go Frank Gore Jr. because of the Chill Auntie Chill video. I really like that.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. And, like, Frank's been all over. We kind of joked about this the other day, made a couple goofs. He was in the GM room during the draft last year. Who knows? Alan, you said planting the seed. I'm just going to go Frank Gore Jr. I mean.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jerry is at every game already.
With the goat chain or goat hat.
They're all day three guys.
Yeah.
They're all day three guys. All, yeah. So if you're looking at, if you care about genes and blue blood, not that, you know, McCaffrey, that whole gene pool is ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
But you'd have to go with Brendan Rice.
You'd
have to.
I don't think personally any of them are going to be a 49er coming out of the draft.
I feel like one of them will.
But I do think Frank Gore Jr. is the highest chance, just in my opinion.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, none of us have any.
Well, maybe because it's, hey, let's just do Frank a solid. He's kicking it with us. And it's 7
I mean, we saw the Cowboys did this too last year, didn't they? Not with any of their legend, but that's with Deuce Vaughn.
Deuce Vaughn, that's my guy. The Niners, that's my type of player.
The Niners wouldn't do that, in my opinion. Like Shanahan, like these draft picks.
But they're not bad.
Yeah, but I think they have to fit a certain criteria.
But that's why I said it wouldn't be Frank Gore Jr. because they don't need a running back.
This dude always needs running backs. He's burning
through.
That's
also true.
He's burning through.
Well,
like
I mean,
crazy.
We haven't said,
and he could be a special.
I haven't said JP Mason's name in a year.
I know, and he's a very good. Like he's a
he was solid. In the
he's good.
Yeah.
He's and the year before he was so incredible to the team. Just a downhill runner. It's unfair that he's. It's not unfair. It's unfortunate he's not getting a run. He could definitely go somewhere and honestly have a nice shot to be the number one guy. I believe that.
When we get back, Brandon Crawford, look, he is a Giants legend, but is he dragging out this tenure or his tenure with the Giants as he goes on another podcast to discuss his departure? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.